I want to talk about mental health, and I want to speak a little bit more specifically to the term itself and offer kind of simultaneously a broader perspective and perhaps a more specific perspective. I know that's a bit of an oxymoron, but stay with me. Let's talk about mental health. This is Corinne Bloom, and you're listening to Raw Conversations. So before I launch in, I want to firstly just acknowledge that mental health is a term that has come up a lot in even kind of mainstream culture. And for a lot of people, it's really helpful to have a term and to be able to discuss it. And especially in certain cultures and countries where, you know, therapy and doing the inner work is still slightly a bit of a taboo, it can be really helpful to have this term. And that it's been really helpful for people to be able to kind of, you know, point a finger to and say, yeah, that's what I'm experiencing right now, or that's what I'm focusing on. So I want to preface this by saying I have a huge amount of respect for that and honor wherever you are in your process with it. The reason why I want to talk to the term specifically, and why, if I'm really honest, I've just never resonated with, I've never really liked the term. And that's not to devalue what it's about. But the reason why I don't like the term is because it's still coming from this perspective that Western culture has, which is very fragmented. It's very separate. Mental health is just, you know, it's still kind of deifying the mind. And yes, the mind is very important, and how we work with it and to a certain degree discipline it or get to know it is very, very important. But if we take it just as something that, like, yes, I'm only going to look at mental health, like I'm going to look at the mental, I'm going to look at the intellectual, I'm going to look at the rational, I'm going to look at the logical, it's still such a minute part of our entire being, and it's not looking at it from a holistic perspective. And I really believe that if you want the true experience and definition of mental health, you have to look at it holistically. That includes emotional health. It includes physical health. It includes energetic health. And people might say, well, Corinne, we're just looking at the specific thing because if I'm not mentally healthy, then the rest of me is not going to be healthy. And I kind of would say, okay, I get it. But actually, we're not truly healthy until we can hold our entire experience and glue together the fragmented pieces. I think this is a real problem. If I put it bluntly, I think this is a real issue with our society and our perspective, is that we look at things very symptomatically. We don't look at the core root cause of things. We don't look at the entire picture. We just kind of go, okay, right, that's the, you know, anxiety. Okay, how do we fix anxiety? Where anxiety is just a louder emotion and sensation that is trying to get your attention for something that it resides much deeper than that. And so that's why I can't look at it just from the kind of the surface or from only one angle, because it just misses so, so much. So for me, you know, when I think about this term mental health, I like this, maybe you've heard it, that, you know, this term, the mind is not the master, but the servant. And Western culture has really made the mind the master. The mind is the most important thing. And, you know, conquer your mind, discipline your mind. Yes, but actually our mind is so much more easily manipulated, which can go for the good or for the bad, right? It can be well-trained, but without good intention behind it, it can be well-trained in a very bad way. So the mind is a little bit more, what is the word for it? Well, let me say the opposite of it. The heart, even though you could go, oh, but my heart can like fall in love with someone and actually it was a disaster. That to me is a little bit different. That's infatuation. It's not love. But the heart, the energy of the heart and the language of the body is pretty damn honest. Whether you pay attention to it is a whole other thing, right? Like your body can have an instinct, an intuition, a gut feeling, a heart feeling, a solar plexus feeling, like a knowing, and then you can bypass it. So it doesn't lie. The mind can lie. It can trick you into things. It can, you know, pull you into narratives and into stories and create realities. And if you've had the experience to kind of see what the mind can do, you know, if you go into a story about something, it can be a fantasy that's either positive, or you could go into a kind of catastrophe in your mind and you will emotionally begin to feel it. You'll feel the emotions, you'll feel the anger or the jealousy or the sadness or the joy or the, you know, and you'll have the physical sensations with it. The mind can create a reality that doesn't even exist. Right? And you know, there's been a lot of evidence to show that even of late. But when you really get into the language of the body and of emotions and you really understand what they're saying and you're really working with them rather than having the tail wag the dog, as I've said before, you can really begin to trust a language that is going to be very honest with you. So this is why I focus so much on the physical experience and the emotional experience, because it's from my perspective, my experience, it's the most direct path to the core of who you are, your wound, your essence, all of these things, really you, it's the most immediate path. So when we're thinking about mental health, we've got to be with, well, what are my emotions saying to me? What is my physical body saying to me? If you have an illness, if you have an injury, if you're suffering from anxiety or depression or, you know, panic attacks or all of these things, you know, if we just go to the mental, you know, what's mentally going on for you? And I might be getting too fixated on the term, but I want to bring attention and awareness to this as a theme, as a topic that we can, well, I'm talking about it, but you can comment and you can contemplate. But if we're just focusing on it, going into the mind to try and figure it out, to solve the problem, this is where for me, even though I think therapy absolutely has a place, it can be really good for identifying things and patterns and you know, understanding why things might kind of be happening. But there is a bit of an old-fashioned therapy that I think really needs to be evolved and updated, and certainly people, practitioners are. They're evolving it and bringing it much more into a somatic experience. But, you know, we can really get stuck in the analysis and nothing changes. Nothing, there's no forward movement, there's no progress, there's no alchemization, there's no transformation, because we're kind of stuck in the analysis. Because you can analyze something with the mind and you can have an understanding of it, but if the experience isn't evolving, then nothing changes, because we are experiential beings. And where we get our, you know, where the wound initially lands is in the emotional and physical body, in the cellular body. It's not in the mind. You know, the mind eventually might find ways of coping with the physical and emotional pain. It might create belief systems and narratives and strategies, but it's secondary. It's always secondary to what is in the embodied experience of our life, of our lives. So when I think of mental health, I think, well, you know, sure, you can see like what are the patterns, what are the beliefs, you know, what are the kind of primary emotions that are arising in this. So you might feel, you know, anxiety is a big one. So I'm just going to use that as an example. So you might really focus on the anxiety. Okay, what do I do to eliminate? That's another thing, is our Western culture is like, how do I get rid of this? How do I eliminate this? How do I get over it? When actually, if we look at it from a holistic perspective and we recognize that it's not that something is mentally wrong with you, you know, there's no imbalance in that sense, or in the brain, I would say there's what has fallen out off center within your entire being. And so you have to see that whatever you feel is the primary thing that you're dealing with, and you're trying to cope with it, and you know, Western medicine might say take a pill for this, take a drug for this, or you know, go talk to a therapist about it. But again, it's just going to really be looking at the symptoms, and you want to go into the core. So you look at anxiety, you thank it, you go, okay, what are you trying to tell me? You are a messenger for something that's happening on a much, much deeper level. So when I work through this process with an individual, it's allowing, giving a voice to the emotion. So what is anxiety saying? If anxiety had a voice, what would it want to say? And you listen to it, and then that will bring you into a deeper emotion and into a deeper unmet need, which will then pull you into the wound, which will then invite you into the healing process, which is how do you show up for yourself and your wounded self, which I've talked about in previous podcasts. But if we completely bypass that, like if we bypass what's going on for me emotionally, what's going on for me physically, and we just stay in the realm of the mental, do you see how it's just looking at one sliver of your reality, one sliver of your experience? Because normally, like I said, the mind is kind of the last one to get on board, you know? And it's also why a lot of people find affirmations helpful, and they certainly can be helpful, but if they are not attached to a feeling and an emotion, an embodiment, they are literally just words, and you can say them over and over and over again, but it becomes habitual. It becomes kind of how we are educated, that you learn by rote. And again, you're mentally trying to convince yourself of something, which can be useful, right? There's nothing inherently bad about it. But again, it's only addressing one portion of your being. The mental, the words, the affirmation is just one layer. It's one dimension. If it's not connected to a feeling of, oh, okay, when I say this and I create this belief system in my mind, and this is what I'm focusing on, because the power of our focus is it's hugely powerful, right? The intention of our focus is very powerful. But unless it's felt in the body, that the embodiment of it, like I'm experiencing this. So it's like I could say to myself, I'm calm, I'm calm, I'm calm, I'm calm, I'm calm. My mind go, yeah, okay, fuck's sake, you're calm. Sorry. But the body might still actually be experiencing anxiety. And another thing that I want to point out here is that we tend to like to go to fixing the symptom, right? Let's get rid of this symptom. It's uncomfortable. I don't like it. What's going to make it better? I feel anxious. I want to feel calm. Okay. But you will not feel calm by going from anxiety and leaping towards calmness to be like, I'm calm. I'm going to convince myself that I'm calm. I'm calm. I'm calm. You have to go through the doorway of acceptance first, which means I have to stay with my experience and acknowledge that what's happening for me right now is I feel anxious. You need to become the container of love that can hold that. It's not good. It's not bad. It's not right. It's not wrong. This isn't an experience that you need to get rid of. You can't circumvent it. You can't bypass it. I know I've said this a million times before. You have to stay with it. And by staying with it and you breathe into it and you bring movement, this is what I talked about in the last podcast on healing, you allow it to shift and transform. And that's where the alchemization can happen. So we, you know, convincing ourselves, it doesn't really work. So I'm going to use an example. When I was in my early 20s, I think it was, I experienced panic attacks. And they're horrible for anyone that's had panic attacks. They're terrifying. They're really terrifying. And the instinct when they come on, because they're so scary, you feel like you're going to die, really. The instinct at first, especially the way that we've been taught, is like you kind of like, you know, you go into tension. You know, I've talked about tension, relaxation, the two states of being. You go into a state of tension because you're resisting it. You're going, I don't want to feel this. It's too scary. It's way too scary. It's too painful. It's so out of control. And so there's the resistance, and then we kind of go to, okay, what can get me out of this as fast as possible? What can I think of? And, you know, sometimes maybe that is a good tactic. Like people will say, you know, open your eyes and look, you know, pay attention to that there's four walls around you. There's the ground, you know, underneath you. There's the chair that's holding you. There, like your tangible things that you can touch and see and sense to bring you, to anchor you into a sense of reality. Because when you're in panic attacks, you're literally going, you're being pulled, like reality becomes augmented. And so anything that can ground you into the present moment and bring you into the density of the present moment, it can be really helpful. But what I personally, how I eventually grew out of them is that I realized that actually the more that I was trying to run away from the panic attack, the louder it got. And I've learned this about emotions as well. When you run away from it, it gets louder because it's like, hey, you know, it's not just like, hey, I need your attention. It's going to start screaming to you. It's going to shout to you that it needs your attention. And so everything that we kind of think is counterintuitive when it comes to our emotional and psychological process, instead of trying to circumvent it or, you know, get rid of it, you walk towards it. And so I learned that the most powerful thing I could do in the middle of a panic attack was to breathe into it, was to soften into it, to not create a barrier against it or to push it away because that just made the panic even worse, but to breathe into it and allow myself to just, you know, I imagine it's like what a bad trip is where, you know, you can freak out, but I know people that do mushroom journeys will say if whatever is the thing that's really scary, that represents the shadow, that's the darkness, that's what you actually want to move towards. You want to be curious about it because your fear, your pain, your anxiety, your sadness, they are always the doorway. They are always the invitation. That's where you want to move towards, not away from. And so sometimes where I get, you know, hung up with this mental health is if you just stay in the realm of the mind, you're missing the invitation. And so you're actually missing the opportunity to truly heal because you're not going to heal in your mind. Your mind is going to be secondary or it's going to be simultaneous, but it's not the primary thing and it's not the final solution. It's not the destination. It's a tool. It's a servant. It's not the master. So the invitation, whenever something comes up that is deeply uncomfortable, the invitation is to walk towards it with curiosity and most importantly, love, which is something that you have to practice and cultivate on a daily basis. And so that when something does arise, it's very acute in the sensation, you can very quickly drop into that space or call upon, or you know that embodiment. That's why I work so much with embodiment, because once you have the feeling, you imprint it like a Polaroid picture, you then know how to return to it. And the more you return to it more frequently, it becomes a habit, right? We're habitual creatures, but it becomes a very healthy habit. It becomes a very, very useful tool. And eventually it becomes just a state of being where you're not even thinking about it. Like it's just, that's your mode of operation is you're like, right, I'm having this experience. I'm holding it with love. I'm not resisting it. I'm not going to go into a state of tension. If I am in a state of tension, like that's okay. I'm not going to judge that. I'm not going to tell myself that I'm failing, or I'm going to breathe into it and I'm going to love that too. So people that are at the beginning of this journey, my phrase is always, can what you're feeling, experiencing, thinking be okay? Like, can it be okay? And even if your answer is no, it can't be okay. I don't like this. Can that be okay? Because the thing is, it kind of all needs to be okay because in essence, it is okay, because it's just our judgment that goes, no, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong, I like this, I don't like this, this is positive, this is negative, this feels good, this feels bad, right? So we don't like it if it feels bad. We don't like it if it's negative. We don't like it if it's uncomfortable. But that's just a judgment. When we go into that, everything is okay because it's just an experience, and that's what life is. It's one experience after the next, after the next. You kind of just fall into the isness of things. You're no longer getting caught in what you think about the isness and what you judge about the isness. You're just in the isness. And when you're in the isness, I sound like Dr. Seuss, you can just love it. You can accept it and love it. And in that comes the softening. In that comes the sense of peace that then you can do what you want to do with it. You can learn from it. You can heal it. You can transform it. You can alchemize it. But this is why I say you have to walk through the doorway of acceptance first, because without acceptance, you're in resistance. You're in denial. You're in like, no, I don't want to face this reality that this is my experience right now because I don't like it. So even if you don't like it, can that be okay? Do you see where I'm going with this? Does that make sense? So there's an invitation in our discomfort. And so don't, when it comes to the healing process and when it comes to this quote unquote mental health, don't get stuck in the mind. Take everything that you're experiencing as an invitation to get to know yourself more, as an invitation to get closer to who you are. And true healing requires that you move through your pain. Healing doesn't come by like, how do I sort this out and, you know, solve the symptom and make it better so that I feel good. You will feel good by feeling the relief of being present with your entire experience without any judgment. I know I'm repeating myself, but I think this is part of this work, is you have to hear it, you have to think about it, you have to feel it, you have to embody it over and over and over again. Because again, I can't stress that we live in a Western culture that is really telling you, in my mind, the antithesis often. Not always, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of it is based on you're not good enough. You know, so that's a very loud voice and a very deep indoctrination that we have to break free from and that we need to heal, essentially. And I think we are doing that collectively. Like, that's what this whole transitional phase of humanity is. It's a huge healing. And how do you heal? The shadows got to come up. You got to look at the shit. You got to look at the pain, you know, and not vilify it, but understand it, be curious about it, and have compassion. Love is the ultimate alchemist, right? So I'm just presenting this as something that you can take away and you can think about for yourself. And just, you know, if you really resonate with the term mental health, okay, great. But I invite you to include all aspects of yourself. Don't keep it in the mind. Don't keep it in the logical and rational, because that is only one half of your mind or one part of your mind. It's not even all of your mind, right? Let alone your heart, your gut, your body, your emotions, your, you know, energetic, auric body, your intuition, your, you know, we're so vast. We're such vast beings. And if we look at things in fragmented, compartmentalized ways, we're just missing a huge opportunity for that feeling of true wholeness. And when we feel that feeling of true wholeness, which doesn't mean that we're all like, I've gone in and I've done the work and now I'm all like, bling, I've arrived, I'm perfect, I'm positive all the time, my skin is all smooth, I've got no wrinkles. You know what I mean? Like that version, that illusion of perfection doesn't exist. Because even when you go in and do the healing work, as I described in my last podcast on healing, even when you go in and you do all the work and you go through all the painful bits and the scary bits and you go through the brambles and you pull out the thorn and you stop the bleed, you will always have the scar. But that is a thing of beauty. That tells the story of your life. That is, you are a piece of art because of your experiences, because of the joys and the sufferings that you've had alike, right? So this idea of perfection or destination, and that you land and then you're good and you don't have to do anything more and everything is all smooth and tidy and clean. No, because that's what makes us so fucking beautiful. You know, we're beautifully messy. We're perfectly imperfect. We are a paradox, and that's fantastic. You know, and the more that you can embrace that, I think the more relief comes within our human experience. And again, I think doing this work doesn't mean that you all of a sudden are just like happy and positive and like, you know, oh, I'm good and I'm okay. No, life isn't that monotonous. It's not just like who was it that was saying this? Someone was saying that, like, you know, when you look at a heart monitor, it goes up and down, right? When you're dead, it goes, and it's just a straight line, right? So living life just as a straight, monotonous line is kind of living dead, right? It's not really being alive. And I'm not saying that you should be thrown into like highs and lows and up and down and all around and, you know, be in the eye of the tornado all the time. But the point is that life is never going to be linear. It's never going to be straight. It's never going to be flat. It's never going to be the same. Change is the only constant. Everything is spiraling and evolving and moving. You know, even the concept, or there was once the we thought it was a fact that the planets are just going around the sun and we're stationary. We're not. We're moving through the universe in space all the time. So there's constant movement. And then the paradox of within that movement, there's stillness. So this is a whole other podcast I could go into, which is about the art of being, which being isn't non-doing. It's very much alive. It's not stagnant. But when we drop into a state of being, it's like, that's when really things can happen. They come from the point of stillness, because there's so much movement in stillness. There's so much in nothingness. That'll be another podcast about the paradox of existence. But this is just an invitation. Go away, take it, and, you know, take it or leave it as feels right for you. But go away and think about it and see what feels true for you, and bring in this invitation of, how do I look at my well-being from a holistic perspective? Not just mental, not even just emotional or physical, right? When we've got physical illness, look to what the emotion is. Look to what the psychology is within it. Everything is interconnected. It's just, we can't separate it. It's just impossible to, right? It's just universal law that everything is connected and everything is one. So why would we look at our health in a fragmented way, right? All right, I'm going to leave it at that. I'm loving you all from afar, and thanks for listening. You've been listening to Raw Conversations with Corinne Bloom. Thanks so much for showing up, listening in, and being a part of the conversation with me.